All right. If you have your Bible, turn to Joshua chapter 2. As you know, we have been in the last couple of weeks. We just started the book of Joshua. And our series is called Strong and Courageous. Strong and Courageous. And the whole point of this series is we want to see how God's people live out courageous faith in God's presence, for God's purposes, and according to God's promises. So I'll say that again. The whole point of our series this next year is how we want to see how God's people live out God's courageous faith in God's presence, for God's purposes, and according to God's promises. And so we are picking up in chapter 2, and I want to kind of give just a little recap of what's going on. It's kind of nice because we can give this recap because we just started. And so the last three weeks, we have seen kind of what's been going on. All right, so Moses was their leader, leading them out of Egypt, as we saw last year, as we went through Exodus. We see that Moses led these people, the Hebrews, out of Egypt, and they're heading towards what God calls the Promised Land. God gave them this piece of land, this area, and says, this is yours. You're leaving Egypt, and you're coming into the Promised Land. And so we left off in Exodus that they left Egypt, and they're moving towards God's Promised Land. And so what we skipped out is that in the process of all this, there's this moment of time where Moses told the Israelites that we're going to go and take this Canaanite land, and this is going to be our land that God has promised to give us. They sent out 12 spies. They came back. They had great reports of the land, of how awesome it is and how great it is. But 10 out of those 12 spies said, but we're not able to take them because these people are too big, they're too strong, military-wise. We just can't take them. And they just showed no faith in God's promises. And so what happened was God says, all right, if you don't trust in me, then you're not going to be able to go into the Promised Land. And so they wandered around for 40 years in the wilderness. Like, they could have been there. Like, they could have gone into the Promised Land, like, in a month plus time, right? But they decided that now they're wandering for 40 years in the wilderness. And they're just walking around, aimlessly, just walking around until all those people who did not trust God literally, like, died of old age. And they walked around and they're just gone. And finally, they're ready to enter the Promised Land. And then Joshua becomes their new leader. Moses passes away. Moses himself was not even allowed to go into the Promised Land because of some of the other things he has done. And so God appoints this man, Joshua. He says, Joshua, you are my man. You will now lead my people into the Promised Land. And so the first chapter of Joshua, we spent 2 weeks going to just one chapter of Joshua. And the first chapter is God continually reminding Joshua, you need to be strong and courageous in me. You need to be strong and courageous. You need to be strong and courageous. And God just keeps on harping this over and over and over again. And then not only Joshua gets this, but then they tell the Israelites, they tell the people, like, hey, you too need to be strong and courageous. And you see everybody like, yeah, we need to be strong and courageous. And they have this big, like, hoorah party, and they're like, yeah, they're getting hyped up, they're getting excited. And it's like, you know, big revival time where they go, we're going to be strong and courageous in God. And they're all excited. And then very next scene is like, okay, what are we going to do now, right? Everyone's like really excited. It's like, yeah, right? And then next scene, Joshua goes and goes, all right, we see that there's this piece of land that we're ready to take. Like, here's like our next target. We're ready to cross the Jordan River. And that's kind of like the barrier and like the boundary into the Canaan land. And so they're on the other side, and they're ready to cross over, and they're ready to go, you know, we're ready to be strong and courageous in God. And so they're like, what are we going to do next? So Joshua says, all right, there's a city called Jericho over there, and that's the first place we're going to take. right? That's the first city we're going to take. We're going to be strong and we're going to be courageous. And that's the first city. So what he does, as any good leader, any good military leader, he goes, God promises us that he'll be with us. God says that he will watch over us. He'll give us this land. But so here we're going to do it. Like, all right, so what are we going to do next? And like, all right, Joshua, what are we going to do? Like, all right, this is what I'm going to do. We're going to go ahead and we're going to send two spies over there to kind of check the place out, all right? And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. So they go and they send two spies. So Joshua gets these two spies and goes, all right, your job is to go into Jericho, check out the land, check out the city, kind of see what you can do there and come back and report back to me. And they go, okay. All right, so here's these two spies going into Jericho. And they get there. And the very first place they go is like this brothel. And like this brothel slash pub place, we'll call it. Right? It's like the common meeting area for all the probably no good people there, right? And it's like, that's kind of what you do when you're spies, right? The first place you go, you kind of go to the dark places. You know, you're not walking into city hall and like, I demand to talk to like, you know, the governor or whatever, right? You go into the dark places. So they go into this little apartment area, this building, and they're probably going, all right, this is good, right? This is the first place we need to go. As spies, you know, we kind of want to hide in the dark. Got to be very careful, and maybe we can go in here, talk to some people, kind of get the scope and landscape of how things are. Maybe you can kind of make some friends, see if there's any like discontent citizens of Jericho, right? Maybe you can go and get yourself that fifth column, the people inside that you can like really like break down the barrier, get some people that like maybe switch sides, and you're kind of just doing it. And that's what spies are supposed to do, right? So they go in there. Apparently, they're just like terrible spies. They're the worst. I mean, like, you read this, and a lot of times we read this, and we just like, yeah, a lot of us, especially when we grow up in church, we know this story. But let's just like really stop and think about it. You are bad spies when you get caught so fast. You know what I'm saying? It's like the first night there, and like, we're spies. We're spies. We're spies. Hey, we hear the spies here. Right? Like, no. Right? And they get caught. Like, people already are hearing, like, who are you talking to? Like, you are, like, how in the world do you get caught and your only job is to not get caught? You're spies. Night number one, they already know you're there. Are you wearing shirts that, like, I am not a spy? I mean, what are you doing? It's ridiculous, okay? So they get caught. And you can, I mean, you can, like you can even, like, just imagine what's going on. Right, so they're in this like this apartment area, trying to talk to people, hopefully trying to be as discreet as possible, right? And then you probably start hearing like going, and you start hearing just apartment after apartment banging. Now, this is just me. Right? It's not in scripture. This is how I picture it. All right. Yeah, I just hear, open up in the name of the king, right? And you got the king's guard going from apartment to apartment, going, hey. I hear there's some Israelite spies here. You hiding any spies? And they're probably like, oh, crap. Right? Like, all right. So it's been a good, like, 12 hours here. what are you supposed to do, right? And so I can just imagine these spies going, oh, shoot. You know, we're dead. We're gone. It's over for us. And you just hear, you know, door after door after door, and I'm just imagining them like they know that they're coming up, and all of a sudden out of nowhere, this woman comes up to these two spies because apparently they're quite visible, like people know they're spies, right? Hey, I think those people are looking for you, right? And she comes up to these two spies and looks at them. Probably in her like best Arnold Schwarzenegger voice, is like, "Come with me if you want to live, right?" And they're like looking at her, and they're like, "I've seen the Terminator. Aren't you the bad guy, right?" And then so I can just imagine her just like, "You need to come with me right now." And they're probably thinking, "What the heck are we supposed to do, right? I mean, like, we got no other choice. I guess we'll go with you, right?" And I can just imagine she's like, "Just come with me. Like, who are you, right?" And come with me. And she brings them upstairs. And she hides them underneath, like, all this, like, she's, like, drying all this flax for linen. And she hides them underneath, like, literally, like, here, get underneath this blanket, right? And it's like, okay. And so they get underneath, and they're just upstairs in the roof. And I can just imagine these spies like, is this really going to work? You know what I mean? Like, this is not the best hiding spot, right? Here, get underneath the bed. They'll never find you, right? Like, I mean, literally, right? Like, you think, like, what, they're going to go up there? It's like, what's underneath there? We're not going to check, right? It's like, oh, man, this is stupid. All right, fine, we'll go underneath, right? So they're like, whatever, we're screwed. And they're probably there, and like, all right, you know, maybe we can jump off this wall. Like, maybe, you know, what, there has to be a way. I don't know. And they're just probably sitting there, and they can just hear the king's guards or whatever, you know, just going, and the soldiers are there in front of their door. And you can probably hear it. You know, all the people in that apartment just left because nobody wants to be around anymore, and it's an empty apartment. And she opens the door, and you can hear just maybe, like, faintly in the distance out there, says, you know, we hear that there's some Israelite spies here. We hear that they've been here. Are you keeping them? And you can just probably just feel the tension in the air, you know? What is he going to say, you know? Like, did she just bring me up there so the soldiers can have some fun with us? Like, what are they going to do? And you can probably hear, and she goes, yeah, they were here. And like, oh, crap, what's wrong with this lady, you know? Can't you just lie? And he's like, yeah, they were here, they were here. But they left. Right? And they're like, huh? Yeah, they left, they left. They actually left. And you better go chase them before the gates close. And they're last I saw, they're running back towards the river. So if you just chase them towards the river, you'll get them. And they're like, man, lady, that is the dumbest. That's the dumbest thing. Come on, that's the stupidest thing you could ever say. You think they're going to buy that? Come on, lady. Oh, that sounds like a great idea. We're heading there right away. It's like, man, these soldiers are dumber than we thought, right? And then these soldiers leave. They leave. And then the gate's shut. And so for a moment, you see that these spies are probably like, okay, we survived, but how the heck are we going to get out now? The doors are closed, right? The gates to the city are closed. But we survived. And they probably just stayed up there. And they're like, I don't know what to do now. Like, where are we supposed to go? And you probably hear the steps go back up. And, this woman comes upstairs. And then here we are in verse 9 of chapter 2. She speaks. All right. And so we'll start in verse 8. It goes, before the men lay down, she came up to them on the roof, and she said to this. She said this. She comes up and says to the men, I know the Lord has given you the land, and the fear of you has fallen upon us, and that all the inhabitants of the land melt away before you. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea before you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan of Sihon and Og, whom you devoted to destruction. And as soon as we heard it, our hearts melted, and there was no spirit left in any man because of you. For the Lord your God, He is God in the heavens above and on the earth below. The first thing we see, this woman comes in and she goes, I've heard of your God. I've heard what your God has done. I've seen how your God has redeemed and saved your people. I've seen it, and I've seen what happens to the people that stand in their way. I've seen what happens to the people that oppose your God. And she goes, I believe this. And I don't think we quite get what's going on, so we're going to kind of just step back a little bit. This is what's happening. If you remember, our series theme for this year is Strong and Courageous. It goes, how God's people live out courageous faith. How God's people, and the question we have to ask ourselves is, who's God's people? Who's God's people? And God's chosen people will not be determined by ethnic lines. God's chosen people will not be determined by social boundaries. God's chosen people will not be determined by material goods, but God's chosen people will always be determined by faith and trust in the Lord. And so the question goes, who's God's chosen people? Those who have faith and trust in the Lord. And the first thing we see is that this woman, that we find out, her name is Rahab, this woman, she has faith because faith means knowing God's historic acts of redemption. And that's the first thing we see this morning, that God's historic, she has faith in God's historic act of redemption. That God's chosen people are those who have faith, and what faith means is the first thing we see what faith means is that she believes in God's historic acts of redemption. She goes, I've heard of all the things that your God has done. I've seen and heard how your God saved you, how he dried up this land, this Red Sea, so you could walk through it, how he has defeated all these people. I've heard what he has done to these kings. And she goes, and she confesses with her mouth, she goes, that he is the Lord, or he is the God of the heavens above and on the earth below. And we see that, what on earth? This woman is professing faith. Here's the thing. It wasn't the fact that Rahab was a spiritual woman. It wasn't the fact that she had general faith in a general God. Faith in itself is useless. I'll say it again. Faith in itself is useless. What makes faith so important is, and what makes it so important for Rahab is she had faith in Yahweh. She had faith in Yahweh. She knew of him and she knew of his power. You see, faith, one of the key components of faith in God is knowing who God is and what God has done. You can't have faith in God without knowing who he is and what he's done. Then it just becomes this spiritualized mumbo jumbo. She had very specific faith. Some of you are here this morning checking things out. You want to know more about who this God is. You want to know about who this Jesus is. You know, I absolutely 100% commend you. You should. Because I believe that our faith is a reasonable faith. It is a rational faith. It is a logical faith. It is not something, just not just some spiritualized, magical thing. And you know what? You should be checking things out. Just like Rahab, we need to go, what is it? What is it that you really believe? And I absolutely commend you that. If you are here doing your homework, wanting to know what Christianity is, wanting to know who Jesus is, that's awesome. You should. I think that's so important. And I'm so glad you're here. And some of us here, we are Christ followers this morning. And the question I want to pose for the rest of us this morning is, do you really know who the God you worship is? Do you know who he is? Are you able to articulate your faith? Because if you can't, then what is it that you really believe? Who do you believe? Do you know God's historic act of redemption in your life? And that's why things like testimonies are so cool, because we can hear how God works and moves in the lives of our friends and family, of our spiritual family. But that's why God has given us his word. He records his historical acts of redemption in here, in his word. And do we want to know it? Do we want to know what his word says? Do we want to know how he has saved his people in the past and how he saves his people today? And for us, as Christ followers, our faith rests on the facts and truth of one great historic redemption story, which is his Son, Jesus Christ, coming down to earth in human flesh, who lived the perfect life and died on the cross, living that life that we could not live, dying the death that we deserved, and defeating sin by resurrecting on the third day, giving us hope that we too one day will have new life with him forever. That is our redemption story. That is our historic act of redemption that we can proclaim. I know this God who came and died for me. That is our story. That is where our faith rests on. That is our cornerstone. And like Rahab, she has faith in God's historic acts of redemption. She knew this God. But Rahab doesn't stop here. Because faith is not just merely knowing what God has done for you or even affirming who God is. She takes it the next step, the next logical, next reasonable step of what faith looks like, is she puts her full confidence and trust in God's mercy and power by acting on the knowledge she knows. And we keep on looking in verse 12. And, she goes, and this is her continuing to talk. She goes, "Now then, please swear to me by the Lord that as I have dealt kindly with you, you also will deal kindly with my father's house, and give me a sure sign that you will save alive my father and mother and my brothers and sisters and all who belong to them, and deliver our lives from death." And then the men said to her, "Our life for yours, even to death. If you do not tell this business of ours, and when the Lord gives us the land, we will deal kindly and faithfully with you." Then she let them down by a rope through the window, for her house was built into the city wall, so that she lived in the wall. And she said to them, "Go into the hills, where the pursuers will encounter you, and hide there 3 days until the pursuers have returned. Then afterwards, you may go your way." The men said to her, "We will be guiltless in respect of this oath of yours that you have made us swear. Behold, when we come into the land, you shall tie this scarlet cord on the window through which you let us down, and you shall gather into your house your father and your mother, your brothers, and all your father's household. Then, if anyone goes out of the doors of your house into the streets, this blood shall be on his own head, and we shall be guiltless. But if a hand is laid on anyone who is with you in the house, his blood shall be on our head. But if you tell this business of ours, then we shall be guiltless with respect to your oath that you have made us swear." And she said, "According to your word, so be it." Then she sent them away and departed, and she tied the scarlet cord in the window. And we see in the end, the spies go back, gives a great report to Josh, and goes, "These people are afraid, their hearts have melted," and then that's kind of where it ends. But we see that Rahab, the citizen of Jericho, gives her full allegiance to the one true God. She turned away from her people. She turned away from the gods that she grew up worshiping. She turned away from all of them, and she goes, "I know your God is the God that saves. And I am saying that I've showed you kindness. This is my act of faith. Now be gracious to me." Who is this woman that can ask this? She's not an Israelite, and she's asking for God's mercy. And you go, wait a minute. This is a very nationalistic book for them, for the Hebrews at that time. For the Israelites, this is a nationalistic book. And they go, this Canaanite woman asking for God's mercy, she isn't God's chosen people. Or is she? As we've seen, that God's chosen people will always be those who place their faith and trust in Him. And she puts her full confidence in God, knowing that He is the one that can save her. Her knowledge of God is the knowledge that leads her to trust and have confidence in God and His character. See, Rahab trusted God's grace and mercy and had the courage and strength to trust in Him. She trusted the Lord's strength and power. She took what she knew of God. She heard of God's historic acts of redemption. So her faith was built on knowledge of who God is and what God has done. And she's taken that knowledge of who God is and what He has done, and she has now placed it into confidence in who God is. And she applied that to herself. You see, what faith is not merely an exercise of knowledge, but is also an exercise of trust. She didn't just go, I know that this is, I can just list out who God is, I can list out His attributes, I can list out all He's done, and I believe that. But she's taking that next step and she goes, I trust in Him. You see, a lot of us right now, we know a lot about who God is, and we know the stories, and we can say, yes, I have faith because I have knowledge of God. But it's not as easy to take this knowledge and apply it in trust in Him. Now, how do we take this knowledge and go, I believe that you have saved people before, to I trust that you will save me. You see? Have we turned our knowledge of God into trust in God? Have we taken the knowledge we have of God and turned that into trust in God? Do we have the same confidence that He can and will save us? What kind of risks are we willing to take with that confidence? Rahab risked her life. She risked her people's life. She risked her family's life. What if they found out before the Israelites came? She's a goner. She's dead. She's a traitor. She turned her back on everything she knew because she knew God is the one true God and He's the only one that can save me. And this has nothing for me. My life just has nothing to offer me. Living in this city as a Canaanite woman has nothing to offer me anymore. And she turns her back from her old life and looks to Yahweh as her Savior. And she goes, that is where I want to be. I pledge my allegiance to Yahweh. That is the God I worship. She placed her trust and confidence in Yahweh, in God, at a great risk to herself and her family. Her going, I trust in Him, places her in great, great danger. But she didn't go, I mean, think about this. She could have done a lot of different things. She could have turned these spies in, packed up her bags, left the city and go, I don't want to be part of that city because I know what's going to happen. She could have done that if she trusted in herself. Right? She could have just packed up her bags and go, I'm just going to go move. I don't want any trouble from anyone, right? You want to look for the spies? Here they are, right? They're going to come and take out. They're going to come and ransack your city. I don't want any part of it. She could have left. She could have. But she goes, you know what? I'm not running. And I'm not trusting myself because I don't know how far and how long I can run. Eventually, it's going to catch up to me. I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to sit here and I'm going to go, you know, you're God. And I'm not. I'm going to trust that you will save me. I will stay here in the city. I'm just going to wait. Wait for you to come and save me. Isn't that crazy? That she puts her full confidence in Him. So that's where the story ends. But here's, I want to just kind of backtrack one more time. So we kind of went through this, and I want us to take a few steps back and just kind of look at this whole thing in a broad perspective. I've read this story so many times, and I've heard this story so many times. But after starting to look through a little bit deeper, I was like, my mind is just blown. This is crazy. She is the unlikeliest of all heroes that you would have thought. This is a prostitute, pagan woman. I mean, I just want to be very clear. If you are an Israel at that time, if there is a representation of what God says you should not be and who does not belong in your chosen group as God's chosen people do not look like this. One, she is a pagan. She worships, she's an idol worshiper. She did not worship the one true God. She worships idols. Right? She's a pagan worshiper. Two, she is not exactly the most moral person on the face of this earth, right? She wasn't sitting on her PTOs in Jericho. She wasn't running for public office. She wasn't helping people cross. She was, what Scripture calls it, she was a prostitute. She sold herself. And more likely than not, it has to be a desperate situation when you come down to that. So she's a pagan. She's a prostitute. And in a society like that, she's a woman. The patriarchal society, you look at this, and I just wanted to backtrack a little bit. Just imagine with me for 1 second. Just 1 second. You are an Israelite reading Joshua. Okay? For the first time. You sit around, or maybe you're just sitting around, and someone's telling you this story. I want to tell you of the story of Joshua. This man that God has chosen, and what God told him was to be strong and courageous. This soldier that God has chosen and loved, and he was the next in line, and God told him to be strong and courageous, and the people of Israel were just hooping and hollering and going, we're going to be strong and courageous. And guess what the very first example of strong and courageous is? Rahab! Can you believe that? Think about this. You got all this going on. Joshua is told to be strong and courageous, and God goes, I've got the best example for you. And you go, all right, what did Joshua do? Oh, no, not about Joshua. It's about this woman named Rahab. By the way, she was a prostitute. By the way, she's not really an Israelite. By the way, she's actually a Canaanite. She was the enemy. Wait, what? Yeah, she was strong and courageous. Strong and courageous in God. And you're like, what in the world? That is crazy. Talk about a turn of events. Talk about the least likely person you choose. Rahab, the first and shining example of what it means to be strong and courageous in the Lord. And it doesn't stop there. Do you know that she is mentioned 3 times in the New Testament? This woman Rahab, this prostitute pagan woman. Do you know what it says? She's mentioned in James chapter 2, verse 25. And James says that this woman had not just faith, but she had works. And James uses her as an example, saying, faith without works is dead. And goes, you should be like Rahab, whose faith had works, that developed into works, that her faith actually produced something in her life. And you know what he goes? When she saved and rescued these spies, when she hung that cord, that is works. And he goes, that is what true faith looks like. Faith that isn't just believing and knowing who God is, but placing trust and actually having your life changed. Because that is what faith looks like, where you have to turn away from your old life and you look to Him and risking everything. And He goes, Rahab, Rahab, out of all people, Rahab, Rahab is your example of what faith into works looks like. He uses Rahab. And in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 31, in what we call this famous chapter of Hebrews, in chapter 11, it is this what we call, it's like the hall of fame of faith. All right, all the people who had great faith, the writer of Hebrews mentions. Was be like this person. He had great faith. Be like Abraham. Be like this person. Be like this person. And it's like these are the people with great faith in God, who had great confidence and trust in God. He goes, you should be like them. And then he mentions Rahab. He goes, Rahab, what a shining example of faith. Rahab. She's not even an Israelite. She's not even a Jew for them in the New Testament. They wouldn't say, she's a Canaanite woman that was a prostitute, who was a prostitute for her occupation. And he goes, Rahab, that is a woman. That is the woman you should have, that you should look to for example. That woman had great faith. Do you know why that this is crazy? Because they go, it's not the past that determines who you are, but if you have faith in where you move on. Rahab, the person who was out of God's chosen people, who became one of God's chosen. A person who was an immoral, who lived immorally, who God goes, I'll wipe that clean and you will now be in my family and you don't have to do that anymore. A person where back at that time, even in the New Testament, where women were not really respected and people didn't really place as much value on them as men, he goes, that you are my child. Doesn't matter. You have my confidence. You have my respect. You have everything. I will give you your worth. It doesn't matter what people say. And then you go, Rahab. Rahab was that faith example. But the one that blows my mind the most. Yeah, those two verses are great. But the one that blows my mind the most is found in Matthew chapter 1, verse 5. You know what's Matthew chapter 1? Jesus' genealogy. Rahab was Jesus' great, 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 whatever it may be, grandmother. Isn't that crazy? We should be right now going, that is insane. I can't believe you guys are just sitting there like, yeah, that's cool. I mean, that is the most craziest thing. Rahab was Jesus' ancestor, direct lineage. And Matthew wrote that in. He goes, I want you to know that Rahab was Jesus' great, 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 whatever, grandmother. Do you know what we take out of this? The one thing. Yes, that God's chosen people will always be determined by faith and trust in Him. But here's the other thing I want you to take away from this. God's grace and mercy is never out of reach. Never out of reach. Who would have expected that the hero of this story is going to be this woman named Rahab? God's so amazing. Is He not? He could have taken Joshua and just gone, Joshua becomes the hero of everything. That makes sense. Rahab becomes the hero. And she's the one that exhibits grace and mercy. She's the one, the very first example of what it means to be strong and courageous in God's grace and mercy to all people are never out of reach. And if God's grace and mercy is never out of reach, then we should be more than determined to share God's love boldly because we don't know who will come to know Him. We can't just look at people and go, no, no, that person's not going to do it. Nah, that person will never, never come to faith. No, no, that person, I don't think so, man. He's going to think this is rubbish. She will just laugh in my face. Yeah, but that's probably what they said about Rahab. You never know who God's going to save. In the Tyndale commentary, the author writes about the book of Joshua. Before the Christian, Rahab's faith provides a model of the one who believes in God's historic act of redemption, whether the Exodus of the Old Testament or the cross of the New Testament. Not only does she believe, but she confirms her faith and then acts upon it to preserve God's people and to advance God's kingdom. So for us this morning, will we have the faith that Rahab had. A faith that knows who God is and knows of God's historic acts of redemption and will replace our hope and trust and confidence in Him. Because God's grace and mercy is never out of reach, even in our own life. Let's pray.